This is Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A botched execution in Oklahoma last night is once again raising questions about the death penalty and whether or not lethal injection constitutes cruel and unusual punishment.
Inmate Clayton Lockett was declared unconscious 10 minutes after he was given the first of three drugs in Oklahoma's new lethal injection combination. 3 minutes later, he began writhing. He said, "Something's wrong," and he strained to lift his head off the gurney. Prison officials halted the execution, and Lockett died less than an hour later of a heart attack.
Oklahoma Governor Mary Phelan ordered a 14-day stay of execution on another inmate while the state conducts a review of Lockett's death. But the botched execution comes as no surprise to our guest today. Austin Serrett, professor of jurisprudence and associate dean of the faculty at Amherst College. His research into the history of the death penalty has found that executions by lethal injection are botched at a higher rate than any other method used in America since the late 19th century, and that despite the government's best efforts, as he writes, pain and potential for error are inseparable from the process through which the state extinguishes life. Austin Serrett's new book is Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions and America's Death Penalty. And Professor Serrett joins us from the studios of New England Public Radio in Amherst. Professor, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So I should say to listeners before we get too far into this conversation that we're going to have an honest conversation about what does go wrong in botched executions. And so therefore this segment might not be appropriate for all listeners. But I also don't want to shy away from the truth. So just that caveat there for listeners. Professor Serrett, first of all, just tell me, what is your reaction to the botched execution of inmate Clayton Lockett that happened last night in Oklahoma with this new, as of yet, I understand, untested combination of three drugs used for lethal injection in Oklahoma?
The fact that the execution was botched is not in and of itself a surprise to me. What is a little surprising to me is the boldness with which states in the United States who are so wedded to executions are now experimenting. It's as if the execution, the scene of execution, was a scene of human experimentation in which drugs, drug cocktails, drug combinations previously untested and unreliable are administered to human beings in the hope that what they will produce will be a humane execution. What we witnessed last night in Oklahoma is the way that hope is belied. And the execution in Oklahoma, I think, is a particularly dramatic and vivid example of what happens when executions in the United States go wrong.
Now, there may be many an elected official and a corrections official in these states who say that in part they are forced to experiment, as you put it, because as we know in recent months, for example, the major drug companies in Europe that at one time manufactured the drugs used in lethal injection won't make them anymore, won't sell them to the United States specifically because they are used in the death penalty. So they've been forced into a corner to use as of yet untested methods.
I think no one is forced to schedule and carry out an execution. Governors always have the power of staying an execution, of withholding this last act until they and the corrections officials in the states in which they serve have confidence that they can administer an execution which is compatible with the guarantees against cruel and unusual punishment contained in the federal Constitution.
Now, let's take a deeper look at your research, which you wrote about both in the Boston Globe recently and in your new book just out today, Gruesome Spectacles. You looked at every execution in the United States performed between 1890 to 2010, and you found that execution via lethal injection has actually been botched at a higher rate than just about any other method used in modern America. First of all, what is the rate and why?
So that's right. The overall rate, when you look at every execution between 1890 and 2010, the rate at which executions were botched was about 3%. That is, every type of method, hanging, the firing squad, electrocution, the gas chamber, and lethal injection, the overall rate was about 3%. Lethal injection, the rate is higher. It's 7%. Lethal injection is, in many ways, a very complicated procedure. It can be botched if the people who are attempting to administer the lethal injection can't find a vein. It can be botched if on the administration of the drug, the inmate, the condemned, has an adverse reaction to the drug. It can be botched if the line carrying the lethal substance gets stuck. A botched execution is to an execution what an accident in a hospital room is to a surgery. It's not surprising they happen. The more complicated the surgery, it's not surprising that the rate is somewhat higher. And in fact, if you look at the 20th century in the United States, there's an interesting story to tell about botched executions. And that's a story about what might be called technological hope.
Uh-huh.
At every turn, from hanging to electrocution, from electrocution to lethal gas, from lethal gas to lethal injection, the same story has been told. And it's been a story of how this new technology would reliably and effectively deliver on the promise that death would be death and not more than that, that death could be administered in a way that imposed, and this is the language of the Supreme Court, no more pain than is necessary. And the story that we tell in the book, the story that I try to get across in the book, is a story that should be familiar to Americans, and that is a story of the promise of technology, but also its failures.
Right.
We've yet to find a reliable and foolproof technology for getting people from life to death in a way that ensures that they will not suffer and that they will not suffer in ways that raise constitutional questions.
Well, I mean, this gets right to the heart of the tension, the legal and ethical and moral tension we find ourselves with in the United States, given that the Supreme Court did re-legalize the death penalty in the 1970s, and yet we have this provision in the United States Constitution that punishments must be carried out in a way that is neither cruel nor unusual. But let me ask you a little bit more about lethal injection before we sort of move further through American history here. I mean, it would seem that society was told at one time this would be the method because it was as close to a medical method to ending life as we had so far. It was not physical, per se, like hanging or the electric chair. It was purely chemical. And yet it, too, as we're seeing from yesterday, is falling under the same traps, technological traps that we've found with other methods of execution. So do you think that we may be down the road of seeing lethal injection be named as cruel and unusual and therefore unconstitutional at some time?
Well, let's be clear. No method of execution in the United States has been ruled cruel and unusual by the Supreme Court. No method has been held to be per se unconstitutional. So I don't think it's going to happen with lethal injection. The issue is not one of the method in of itself. The issue is one of whether the method can be administered in a way that delivers on its promise. And the promise of lethal injection, yes, chemical, not physical. But if you go back and you read what was said in the late 19th century and early 20th century about electrocution, and you substitute for the word electrocution lethal injection, it sort of says the same thing. If you were to read about what was claimed for the gas chamber, it sort of says the same thing. All of the technologies that have been implemented have come with a promise of their effectiveness and reliability in ensuring that the death penalty was the death penalty and not a form of torture.
Hmm. I see what you're saying because you've written that people at one time called electrocution a, quote, clean, clinical, undisturbing method of execution. And then execution through gas in the early 20th century following techniques developed in the First World War, they were called swift and painless. And yet in more than 5% of those executions with lethal gas, it was neither swift nor painless.
So the issue of botched executions raises not just a constitutional question, but I would say a political and cultural question. After all, how we punish is as much about who we are and who we want to be as it is about what we do to those who allegedly deserve to be punished. How we punish is a great test of our character, and the Eighth Amendment is really quite remarkable, and I think a kind of touchstone of the American Constitution as a whole. The Eighth Amendment, after all, is a guarantee of restraint in the way in which we treat people who we've already determined deserve to be punished. Unlike other amendments to the Constitution, the protection against unreasonable searches and seizure, the protection against compulsory self-incrimination, which are protections of people before they've been convicted, the Eighth Amendment is a protection of those who've already been determined to be worthy of punishment. And it asks of us, in a sense, to exercise restraint, to rise above the justifiable anger, resentment that we feel in the face of heinous offenses.
Hmm. Let me ask you a little bit more about that, because you know we've been talking about the frequency with which executions via various methods have been botched, everything from hanging to electrocution to the gas chamber and now lethal injection. But what about the persistence of the death penalty as a whole in states where this form of punishment has not even been meted out for several generations? I mean, mm-hmm. It was just a couple weeks ago that New Hampshire took a vote on abolishing the death penalty. That vote ended up deadlocked, so the state retains its right to administer the death penalty, but it hasn't done so in over, 70 years. Why the persistence of it if it's not even something that's being used, say, in a state like New Hampshire?
So the death penalty is to some extent a symbolic expression of a society's disgust with a crime. New Hampshire isn't an aberration. Actually, most of the states which retain the death penalty on the books, Pennsylvania, California being two other examples, they have large death rows, not true in New Hampshire, and they very, very rarely execute. So juries sometimes sentence people to die, and states just leave them in languish on death row because it's the sentence itself that expresses the community's disgust or the community's outrage. It's also the case that I wouldn't make too much of what happened in New Hampshire. If you look nationally, over the last decade or so, there have been dramatic changes in capital punishment in the United States. If you go back to the late 1990s, about 300 people a year were being sentenced to death in the United States. That number has been cut by more than two-thirds. If you go back again, about a decade or so ago, the high point of executions in the United States, there were 98 people executed in the United States. That number has been cut in half. So we're in a period of national reconsideration of capital punishment in which there are grave doubts, not just about capital punishment as a philosophical issue, but about whether or not we can deliver capital punishment in a way that is consistent with our values. What happened in Oklahoma, I think, crystallizes that question around not just the method of determining who gets the death penalty, but the method of delivering execution itself.
Hmm. If I may jump in there just for a moment, because you make an interesting point that also is reflected in your research, because, and this takes us back to, again, the current state of what was, I guess, the current troubles that lethal injection as a methodology finds itself in, because you've written that states like Missouri and Virginia, in the light of botched recent executions via lethal injection, are actually considering bringing back older methods such as electrocution and the gas chamber. Is that true?
It is, and I think it's an indication that proponents of the death penalty in the United States are on the defensive. I think it's an indication that in the face of the doubts that many Americans now have about the viability of the death penalty and its compatibility with American values, those are signs of desperation, a little bit like swimming upstream and the hope that you'll find a safe shore. I think there is no technology over the horizon that holds the promise that we've attached to lethal injection and Befort gas and Befort electrocution, there is no emerging technology that promises to do it better than lethal injection. Justice Scalia famously said in a capital case, comparing the crime to the punishment, how enviable a quiet death by lethal injection. Well, that may be the promise of lethal injection, but that is not the practice of lethal injection. And the resort to other methods, going back to the firing squad or electrocution, is not going to produce quiet death at all.
Do you think that the United States, by virtue of having this tension between the constitutionality of the death penalty versus the unconstitutionality of cruel and unusual punishment, finds itself in an impossible situation, that we are actually aspiring for a standard of punishment which we will never be able to reach?
Well, in the context of the death penalty, I don't think the dilemma is quite as you described it. The United States could live without the death penalty, as countries in Europe are now living without the death penalty. We could live without the death penalty and still rank as, if not the most punitive, one of the most punitive societies in the world. So I don't think there's a particular tension between our attachment to the Eighth Amendment and our attachment to the death penalty that couldn't easily be resolved, as it was resolved in the state of Connecticut, as it was resolved in the state of Illinois, Missouri, New Jersey, New Hampshire, just to name five states that have within the last several years abolished capital punishment.
So how is that a resolution, though, if there is still a large percentage of the United States populace and political establishment that wants to keep the death penalty legal?
Well, again, I think support for the death penalty is now broader than it is deep. About 60% of the American populace, when asked whether they support the death penalty, will say yes. Again, I think that's a kind of symbolic gesture. When you ask them whether they would support the death penalty as opposed to life without parole, then support for the death penalty goes down. The choice between the death penalty and life without parole is about 50-50. And I think, in a sense, Americans, if we can talk about jurors in that way, Americans on juries, for example, are kind of voting with their feet. They're refusing to impose death sentences. So I think that tells you a little bit about where the national conversation is going. Think about Mitt Romney. When Mitt Romney was governor of Massachusetts in 2005 and contemplating running for the Republican nomination for president, he introduced a death penalty bill in Massachusetts. But that death penalty bill was so burdened, so attached to protections that we might have had a death penalty but never executed anyone. And so I think the situation in the United States now with respect to capital punishment is, I think we're on the road to abolition. I think the abolition will be slow and not without its pitfalls, but I think by the time my son, who's now 18 years old, is my age, that the death penalty in the United States will be gone. And if it's not gone, it'll be limited to places like Texas and Oklahoma, which will stand out as gross exceptions to the evolving standards of decency, which will have carried the United States towards abolition.
Well, Professor Serrett, let me close with this one question, which has been lingering in my mind, because many people feel exactly as you do, that, you know, as you say, quote unquote, there's an evolving standard of decency in the United States that is bringing into question the death penalty as a whole. But there still remain quite a few people out there who say, look at the crime that Clayton Lockett, the inmate who went through the botched execution in Oklahoma yesterday, look at the crime that he was convicted of. He was convicted of shooting a 19-year-old young woman who had interrupted him as he was robbing a home, burglarizing a home with some of his associates. And then he watched as she was buried alive. And that, for as long as the death penalty is a punishment for a crime so heinous as that, we are entirely misplaced in worrying about whether or not there was any suffering at the end for the convicted felon.
So the test of a society like our own is, what can and what should we do in the face of justifiable anger at heinous crimes? I don't underestimate the heinousness of the crime that he committed. I don't underestimate the seriousness of the damage, the unspeakable suffering that capital crimes produce. But when we punish, the question that we're asking is who we are and who we want to be. Do we want to be like the people that we condemn? Or do we want to say that there's nothing that they can do that will lead us to violate our own deepest moral and legal values? I hope the answer to that question is we won't give in to the temptation to respond to them in light of the seriousness and heinousness of the crimes that they've committed.
Well, Austin Sarrett is a professor of jurisprudence and political science, and he's director of the student faculty research at Amherst College. He's also author of the new book that is just out today called Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions, and America's Death Penalty. Professor Sarrett, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Again, thanks for having me.
And listeners, let us know what you think about the issue of the death penalty and botched executions. You can send us a comment at radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more of the show coming up in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. This is Radio Boston.